Prabhupada ki jai. So I'll start with a story. Once in a quiet forest, there stood a majestic, tall tree, oak tree. It was very, very tall and also very strong. It had an illustrious crown, actually, a crown that had branches that would spread all above the other trees in the forest. And from years of weathering storms and tolerating intense heat and heavy downpours, it had grown to be very, very strong, and it towered above the rest of the forest. Often it would boast of its own strength, claiming to be the toughest of them all. Nearby in the forest, by the edge of a little stream, there grew a humble reed. This reed was slender and slim and flexible. It was everything that the oak tree was not. And so often it would find jokes being made at its expense, the oak tree boasting and making a comparison about the two sizes. Time went on and seasons changed. And one day, a powerful storm swept through the entire forest. Wind ripped through the trees, and this oak tree stood strong, enduring the onslaught of these winds. But with each passing minute, the winds got faster, stronger, and more intense. Moments later, a loud, piercing crash was heard throughout the entire forest, followed by a thunderous boom. As the storm subsided, the once tall and proud oak tree lay on its side. And across the forest, in the clearing, the humble reed stood still and poised. Withstanding adversity in our spiritual journey is not dependent on the hardness of our hearts that may have happened over many, many years of practicing Krishna consciousness, or the toughness of our resolve when sometimes we just grit our teeth and get through a lapse in faith. Nor is it dependent on the height of our rank in our community or how many people we are the service authority of. But rather it's the submissive surrender to the will of Krishna and Guru that is our metric. When the winds of adversity challenged the humble reed, its surrender to the direction of Krishna's arrangement is what allowed it to pass the storm. Whereas the oak tree's rigidity, hardness and arrogance were what led to its demise. To me, in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada is making 3 points. That first, Krishna has given us everything we need. All potencies are there in a dormant state. Second, the will of Krishna is the driving force. It's what enables us to act, to use what Krishna has given us. And lastly, it's Krishna's direction that enables us to act productively. Essentially, if we use our potencies that have been given for action in accordance with Krishna's direction, it leads to spiritual fruition. The many dormant potencies and even the will of Krishna that enable us to act are like many, many zeros. And acting in accordance with Krishna's direction are what add a one in front of those zeros that actually give it meaning. Otherwise, those dormant potencies, no matter how valuable they be, they lay dormant. I think as devotees, we're generally quite clear on the first point, right, that we possess these potencies, right? How many of us have heard of this before? Maybe in the Gita, when we read about the divine and demoniac qualities, or many times when the nature of the soul is mentioned, right? Quite a few of us have heard of this. Yeah, nodding heads. It's the core basis of a philosophy that we are simultaneously one, but also different from the Lord, right? In yesterday's wonderful class, His Holiness Bhanu Swami made the point that we as jivas are Shakti of Krishna, right? We possess the qualities, and it's these qualities that allow us to have a relationship with Krishna and experience the rasa, experience taste. Because taste is in the relationships that we hold. But it's the quantity in which we differ from Krishna. Krishna really hammers this point home in the Gita to Arjuna when he says, Mama evamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manaha shastyani indriyani prakriti shtani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So actually we're repeatedly told, right, that we possess all these necessary qualities and the fact that it's just dormant and we need to awaken them. But I guess the million-dollar question is, how do we awaken them? Ananta Gopal Prabhu once told me that true realization means that your actions and behaviors have also changed. If your actions and behaviors don't have a tangible change, then actually you may not have realized what you think you have. And so to awaken these qualities, we need to understand what they are. It requires real understanding. And the way to get real understanding is to go through or be open to purification. Purification requires endeavor and grace, right? So an example of this is when I was recently, I've been reading about creation and trying to study creation a little bit more. And yeah, it's not always been the most rustic experience, right? Creation sometimes, often it's a quick way to, at least for me, to get a nap when I'm reading about it. But, however, if we endeavor to really delve into the Shastra with humility, regardless of what we're reading, we generally always actually find some instruction being shared with us through Prabhupada. Because one thing, when I started thinking about, okay, what is the instruction here in this reading, which I'm struggling to get through, I actually came across this point that creation is actually there to remind us that everything around us is Krishna's energy. Right. That's one of the reasons why there's such a big emphasis on understanding the universal creation. To hammer home the point that everything around us is Krishna's energy. And the more we try and remember this or keep this in our consciousness, it slackens our tendency to try and enjoy the world around us. It's a really similar effect to when you enter someone else's house, right? Like your behavior changes, isn't it? You all of a sudden become very conscious that the things around you are not yours, and you have to be very careful about whether you break them or how you treat them. You become a lot more respectful. But when you think about it, this is actually a massively important point for us to understand in our relationship with the material world, right? That the things around us are not ours, but Krishna's energy, and so we must use them in service, but not get this, you know, false understanding that they're mine and for me to enjoy. And Srila Prabhupada hammers this point home frequently in his purports and many other places in his lectures too. But this incredibly important point would have fully gone over my head if that slight endeavor with a tinge of humility wasn't there to get through. And then along with that endeavor comes, we invite Krishna's grace. But that's why this point of humility is so important, because if I then started to think that, okay, I've read your books, Prabhupada, I've read your writings, and so now it's become my rightful claim to get as many realizations as you can give me. It's not exactly how it works. And that's why the point of humility is so necessary. It's a bit like when a child really wants a toy, and so they go to the parent and they say, please, please, can you get me this toy? And the parent, in return, says, okay, why don't you wash these dishes? And if they go well, if I'm happy with your work, then I'll buy you the toy. Now, the monetary value of the child washing the dishes does not equate to the value of the toy if you were to go and buy it. But it's the child's endeavor that wins the favor of the parents. And so similarly, our small endeavors don't give us a rightful claim to any degree of realizations or anything really, but it's the endeavor that wins the favor of Krishna's mercy, of Krishna's grace. I'll take a little pause here to just see if everyone's still with me, if anyone has any questions, or have I just been rambling on? Any questions so far? Everything clear? Yeah. Okay, cool. So I think the first point then is fairly clear. Loads of nodding hands is reassuring. That all the potencies are actually there in a dormant state, right? They're present both in the beginning of creation, but also in each and every one of us, right? There's a deeper layer to these verses and purports. They apply to us on a much more micro level as well. And we've also done the extension work of seeing how we can unlock or awaken these dormant potencies within us by being open to purification through the endeavor and grace of Krishna. Yeah, there's a question. Yeah, sure. Thank you for your question. Yeah, sure. So, what's your name? Sorry? Kushi. So, Kushi has the question that can we get some examples of the types of potencies that are within us? Sorry, before I continue, I see a slight confusion. No, okay, fine. Okay. So, by my understanding and the kind of the way in which I'm interpreting Srila Prabhupada's purport and his reference to these potencies that are within us on a much more local level are essentially the point that we are the eternal, like the verse that I previously mentioned, that we are the eternal fragmental parts of Krishna. And so in quality, we are, identical to or similar to Krishna, but it's the quantity in which it differs. So, you know, the potencies and the qualities that Krishna possesses, but in a minute degree, fame, beauty, renunciation, etc. Is that okay? I also had in mind. I don't remember the full verse. I wasn't so attentive in Bhakti Shastri. Maybe it was my teacher. I don't know. But however, it's. I think it's the 13th verse where the divine and demoniac qualities are also mentioned, and how they fall into the different modes. So those are also some potencies that I had in mind while I was reflecting on this verse. Okay. So then moving on to the second point of this purport, which highlights the necessity of Krishna's sanction, right? Unless they are combined by the will of the Lord, nothing can progress. And I think this point is quite clear just through Krishna's pastimes in itself. How, we hear often Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. But also, we also read in his pastimes how just one moment he can house the whole universe in his mouth just to bewilder his beloved mother. Or he can manifest the Virat Rupa to his surrendered Sakha, Arjun. And we often hear about how not a single blade of grass moves without his sanction. So I think this second point is quite clear and simple to understand, which then takes us to the third point, which I feel Srila Prabhupada is making for me, is that the progressive work of creation can only be revived by the direction of the Lord. And how, in order for us to progress in spiritual life, our actions have to be in line with Krishna's desire, have to be in line with Krishna's direction. It's acting in accordance with these arrangements, with this desire, that puts that one in front of the many zeros that are these dormant potencies that we possess. But it's the importance of this point which also, to some degree, makes it one of the toughest parts of our journey too. To align our own actions in accordance with Krishna's directions, in accordance with Krishna's desires and arrangements. It's the toughest because it requires putting our own directions and our own desires on the back seat and letting Krishna take the wheel. It requires selflessness. Selflessness, often in the material context, it kind of means it implies a negation of the self, right? It's the opposite of self-absorption. But spiritual selflessness is actually the opposite. It means affirmation of the real self, right? I thought that was quite interesting how selflessness in the material context is the opposite of self-absorption. It's the negation of the self, Whereas selflessness in a spiritual context means appreciation and affirmation of the real self. But it's still difficult because developing selflessness is a little bit like learning a new language. And I'll explain. But first, it's important to maybe highlight how difficult it can be to learn a new language. Because you're not only you're actually changing how you see the world around you. And we'll let the curtains open. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shishi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So yes, selflessness. It's a difficult trait, and often it can be compared to learning a new language. I remember in high school, I actually tried to pick up Mandarin, and it was really difficult. So difficult, I guess I'll just leave it at this story. This one time, I tried to join a conversation of two people I thought were speaking Mandarin, and it turned out the whole time they were actually speaking Korean. So it just goes to show that maybe languages are not my strong suit, but also they can be a little bit difficult to learn too. And I guess, why is it difficult? Why is selflessness similar to learning a language? Because when we're learning a language, it's not that the table changes what it is to suit how you call it. Actually, the table stays the same, the chair stays the same, the walls stay the same, but what you call them, how you code them in your brain is what changes. And so similarly, selflessness is not about changing our surroundings. It's not about changing our association, but rather it's about transforming how we interact with our surroundings. It doesn't require a radical shift of circumstances, but one of perspective. And it requires us to constantly question ourselves and acknowledge that the false ego is a part of our consciousness. And we have to ask, you know, in any given circumstance, are my actions motivated by a desire for fame or adoration, or are they motivated by a longing to please Krishna? Are any words I'm sharing stemming from a hidden desire to make the best arrangements for my own comfort, or do they come from a genuine desire to serve Krishna? Because if we choose to connect our actions in accordance with Krishna's desire, then actually we'll experience grace no matter what occurs in our immediate environment. And so I think that's the significance of the third point for me, and how it's so, so important that whenever we're looking to carry out any work, we're conscious that it's aligned with what Krishna's desires may be for us, or what Krishna's arrangement may be for us. Last week or some time ago, we hosted a retreat for those who are suffering from, you know, different addictions like alcohol addictions, and the aim was to show them that the bhakti literatures also provide a solution to recovery, a solution to addiction. And we had a conversation, and some of the conversations were really, really eye-opening for me. What was interesting, we had a group conversation which was directed around our belief in God, which was directed around where does our faith in God come from and what is our current understanding of God. And all of these people really didn't have much conception of Krishna, or kind of had never heard of the bhakti philosophy before. But they had deep, deep faith that God exists, that, you know, God is a big part of their life, and it's by God's arrangement that they are there and present. They actually fully gave credit to God for simply them being present, which is actually a pretty deep level of conviction. In this circumstance, we can see actually that these people are faithful people with good hearts. And so you can see that the first point of these dormant potencies are present within them, and to some degree they're even awakening some of those potencies. And even the faith that the will of the Lord is present is still also there. But one thing they shared was that despite this conviction in God, despite this faith in God's existence, they would still relapse. They would still sometimes dip back into their addictions which is very sad to hear. And for me, it really highlighted the point and really hammers home the third point that Srila Prabhupada is making in this purport, that we must align our actions in accordance with Krishna's desires, in accordance with what we think Krishna's arrangements are in any given moment. Be conscious of our false ego in our actions, because simply having faith in Krishna's will being the driving force and that we have some spiritual nature is not enough. We have to also be aware of the motivation of our actions and how much does it align with what Srila Prabhupada has laid the example of, and many other of our spiritual leaders have laid the example of in front of us. So these are just some small points that I wanted to share on this purport here. But if anyone has any questions, any comments, criticisms, any additions, then please do share. I'd be very eager to hear.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your lecture. I wanted to first ask is, what is the will of the Lord?
Mm.
How do you know if we're actually going with the will of the Lord?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if we don't know that, then we're going against the grain.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. It's a beautiful question. A few years ago, I remember when I first coming to Krishna consciousness, I had this one question on my mind, which was somewhat similar, which was, how do we see what Krishna's lessons are throughout when we are facing adversity or when we've gone through adversity, right? How do we see what Krishna's arranging for us? If everything is happening for us and not to us, how do we know why it's happening for us? And many of the answers I got took me some time to understand. I still really kind of haven't found solace in some of the answers I've got. And in preparation for this class, I was thinking about this point, and one thing that actually became quite clear to me was that trying to see Krishna's lessons after having faced, or Krishna's will after having gone through adversities, is a far, far, far more painful task than in the first place aligning our actions with what Krishna's arrangement and Krishna's desires are. Because once we do that, then actually everything that happens is and will can definitely be considered the grace of the Lord and Krishna's mercy. What I would say to how do we understand Krishna's will and how do we understand Krishna's direction, it can actually be sometimes a fairly nuanced task, but I always defer to trying to find solace in the example of Srila Prabhupada or the example of my spiritual teachers or even my seniors, and introspect before I act. Often the answer lies in the motive of our actions itself. How much are my actions being dictated by my own desires for my own fame and adoration, and how much are they actually to serve Krishna? Because our relationship and how we are most happy is when we are in connection with Krishna, in connection with our relationship with Krishna. And Krishna's desire is for us to be as happy and feel that love, feel that connection. So that's why, by my understanding, Krishna's will is anything that would help us rekindle that relationship with Krishna, rekindle that love, that loving relationship. I hope that helps. Somewhat vague answer, but in any given circumstance, there's many, many ways to try and figure out that. Right. Thank you. Yeah.
That was my first question. The second question is, why are the potency in a dormant state? Why are they never active?
Yeah. Wonderful. The question was, why are the potencies in a dormant state? Why are they not active? Do you have an addition? Yeah. Antaranga Prabhu has an addition to that.
So I was actually just doing a research on this particular point just now.
Mm-hmm.
In the previous chapter, where Sri Maitreya explains to Vidura the pastimes, the reason why this actually continues as a chapter 6 initial verse is actually that the demigods are praying to the Lord that please give us that empowerment so we may continue with the creation, with the maintenance, and outperforming our duty. So it's a continuation from a previous chapter. So the Lord is hearing now why the process of sort of a creation or maintaining the universe was suspended due to demigods requesting the blessings and permissions to actually, or recognizing the Lord's energies and potencies as an element of continuation for the universal creation. So it's a continuation of a prayer. Please empower us. And the Lord heard, okay, the reason why this is not going correctly is because, you know, these demigods, they require the empowerment. So there was that kind of a link of connection between those which are performing the activity and the Shaktiman, the connection of that energetic. Anyway, does it make sense? From previous chapter.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for that. Another point which I was also thinking of, and it was essentially, I'm kind of parroting what Sound Hispanic Swami mentioned yesterday, that these Krishna's looking to experience bliss, Krishna's looking to enjoy, he's the supreme enjoyer, and we are to be enjoyed, right? But that relationship of between the enjoyer and the enjoyed can only exist, and a relationship can only truly be authentic and exist when there is a degree of free will and action in place, when the jiva is out of their own volition, out of their own desire, is choosing to act in a loving relationship. That is when the doors and the opportunity to experience that bliss open. And so similarly, these dormant potencies lie within us, but they still require, but it's because our own initiative is what gives them life. Our own initiative is what gives life to the relationship, using those potencies to rekindle that relationship with Krishna. Does that help? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Prayojana Prabhu has a point. Yes.
A point. Certainly. In chapter 15... Yes. It says, I am seated in everyone's heart. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. I am to be known by all the Vedas. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedas. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible, in the material world. And every living entity is... in the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the material world, every living being is called infallible. Besides these two, there is a greatest personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord, who enters into the three worlds. Because I am transcendental, both to the fallible. I am the greatest. I am celebrated by most in the Lord. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, he therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me. So, I don't know if that really qualifies it, but there is a goal. We're fallible. And infallible, but if we engage in devotional service, we come to him, full devotional service. So,
wonderful.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Rasraj Prabhu has a question. Two questions. Wonderful. Three. Wow. Five.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for that class, and I appreciate it. The first time I'm hearing you, what a wonderful class it is. Thank you. My question is that you talked about selflessness being like learning a new language and always checking our motivations behind each action while we're trying to be selfless. So when we find a certain motivation behind a certain action, we found a certain anartha, you could say, then what do you do going forward to remove that anartha? First question.
Wonderful. So I'll just reiterate so we're clear on the same page. How do we, when we are introspecting on our actions and our motivations, how do we understand, how do we deal with certain anarthas that may come up in that introspection? How do we process them? Yeah, it's a tricky one. And I think, again, it really depends on what anartha is coming up when, to which degree. I guess the first step that I would like to think that I would do, and one that makes sense, is turn to Krishna, turn to Srila Prabhupada, and turn to our seniors and open our heart. Revelation, you know, revelation of the heart, one of the loving exchanges, is our equivalent to our confession. You know, sharing what's going on in our hearts is the equivalent to our confession booth. Because actually it's when we offload this weight that we're holding in our heart, what's happening is that we're actually breaking the cycle of karma. Sorry, what's happening is that we're actually breaking that cycle of karma where, you know, that the bijam, the sinful desire, the thought leads to, you know, some form of action, and then that action leads to manifest, unmanifest, and which leads to the proclivity to commit that action again. But if at that first stage we open our hearts to the bijam that is there, we fry that seed of sinful desire, and we open ourselves to blessings, which is such an important thing to do before we go through that whole cycle of committing those actions and then developing the proclivity to, you know, commit them again. So that's why, yeah, I think the first step is revealing our hearts, not only in front of the deities or Srila Prabhupada, but also amongst our peers or amongst our seniors, wherever we feel comfortable and trusted. And then secondly, I think it really is dependent on the case by case, whether we're feeling some degree of envy or pride. You know, I honestly believe sometimes it can lead to some slightly uncomfortable conversations, but things like envy or things like pride, especially in our relationships, communication and being humble and honest are the surefire ways to help deal with them. Does that help?
Thank you. Yeah, that does help. Do we have time for more questions?
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned that in the meetings that you had with you could say the people who are having problems, addictions, then most of them said things like, God has done everything for me and I exist due to him.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to him.
Yeah.
My question is, and I don't know if there's Prabhupada's quote regarding this, but since they don't know him, who he is, could it be called devotion? Or could it be called on, I don't know, you know, there, because you know what I mean? Trying to get to a level of understanding where they are. They may be in their spiritual journey somewhere. That Shraddha may be there, but if you don't know the person who you're talking about, is it almost like it's completely irrelevant that you're speaking about him? So that's my question.
Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna, Vishwambra Prabhu is here. So yeah, just to understand again, if people's faith in God is not rooted in the understanding of Krishna, is it still devotion? Is that correct?
Krishna being a, I mean, God being a person.
Or God being a person, at least a person, is it still devotion? Yeah. Yeah. I guess the first thing that comes to my mind, and I think that you had a second part of the question of is it still good or is it still beneficial in some way? The point that comes to my mind often is when we speak about different types of faith, is that they all lead to a progression of consciousness. Simply, and even in like the Vedas or in the Bhagavad Gita, when there's an emphasis on the demigods in whichever place, one point that's always mentioned is that belief or faith in the demigod, in a demigod, still leads to a progression of consciousness, even though it's not, you know, complete surrender to Krishna. So similarly, for many of these people who put their faith in God and saw God in nature or felt God as a force, it still is acceptance that there is something greater than themselves. It still is, in one sense, a victory over the false ego, which in itself is claiming to be God. Now, the point about devotion, I've always understood devotion to be understood as loving devotion, and loving devotion requires there to be a relationship. Loving devotion requires, you know, they say to serve means to please, and to please means to love. Oh, no, to serve means to love, and to love means to please, right? And so in order to actually serve, in order to kind of add to a relationship, there has to be some form of exchange, some form of love. So by my understanding, devotion is to some degree exclusive to there being a personal relationship.
I'll ask the third question later, but thank you for the second question. I think I got the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're just going to pass the mic, just for the online listeners. Thank you, if there are any.
Yeah, Sukadeva Goswami and the Four Kumaras also had an impersonal understanding before they become fully realized. Quick point.
Yeah, thank you. That's one point. Thank you. Wonderful. Okay, I guess is there any more questions from the Mataji side? Any comments? No? Okay. Thank you. Oh, there's one from Bishal. Yes.
So just a quick follow-up on the answer you gave about opening our hearts.
Mm.
You said that opening our hearts breaks that karmic cycle.
Mm.
I was wondering if you could describe
the stages of that cycle.
The stages, mechanism.
Yeah, sure. Luckily, I had a really good Bhakti Shastri teacher, so I think I remember some parts of it. from the Nectar of Devotion, it's essentially it's bijam, which then leads to which means the sinful desire, or the sinful seed, which then leads to papam, which is the sinful action, which then leads to aparabdha karma, which is unmanifested reaction, which then could take a direction towards prarabdha karma, which is manifested reaction in which you experience suffering because you get the reactions, or if it remains unmanifested. And then the example given in Bhakti Shastri was how sometimes if we were to steal a Mangal Arati sweet, we think no one's looking, but actually that unmanifested reaction is there. You know, it will come around at some point, you know. May come in the form of diabetes. It'll come around. At some point, it'll come around. But that unmanifested reaction happens. And so what's really dangerous, actually, and this is where I feel is the most dangerous part of the cycle, is that when that unmanifested reaction or doesn't manifest, the mind builds a proclivity to commit that sinful action again because it thinks, oh, I've got away with it. Next time I can get 2 Mangal Arati sweets. And this time it'll be the brown ones, not just a sundae. I'm going into dangerous territory talking about prasad just before breakfast. But how does opening
break that cycle?
Yeah. Essentially it relieves the mind of the weight of that bijam, that seed, that sinful desire. And not only does it relieve the mind, but more importantly, actually, it opens us to the blessings of the devotees. It opens up to their mercy. When we're being vulnerable and we're being open, the most important, the best thing, the medicine for us in that situation is the devotees' blessings. That is how it helps. Thank you. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Gaura Premanande, Hari Bol.